Welcome to the Music Ed Matters podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Emily Williams-Birch, and this podcast, it exists for you. Whether you're a music lover, an educator, a choir member, each week we bring guests to the show to help explore what matters in music. I'm so glad that you're here. Welcome to the show. Hello, and welcome to the first episode of 2021. This is episode number 39, and you're going to hear from my friend Emily Crow. Emily has taught in a variety of classrooms, music classrooms, math classrooms, and now she's recently transitioned, choir classrooms, don't forget choir classrooms. She's recently transitioned into administrative positions and is developing so many cool big picture advocacy style things. I thought it would be the perfect episode for the start of the year because together, Emily and I talk about what she has learned in an administrative role versus the classroom role and what we can take as classroom teachers back into our classrooms. We talk about how to take care of ourselves so we can come to our students and our singers as our best selves, and ultimately trusting in our students and in us and in the process. Oh, and at the end of the episode, Emily and I share our favorite books for improvement. You're going to love the first ever book review of non-music related books on here. It's fabulous, and I have linked those in the notes. Thank you so much for listening today. Before I turn you over to this conversation with Emily Crow, I want to thank the people over at Kinnison Choral Company for making all of this possible. If you are looking at repertoire and ideas for this semester, go jump over and check out their song list of fantastic support tracks to help you teach, whether that's virtually or hybrid or in person. I have really enjoyed working with them, and I think you will too. Use Music Matters at checkout for 20% off. Without further ado, trusting your singers, trusting yourself, and trusting the process, here's my conversation with Emily Crow. Hello, we are welcoming to the show one of my friends, Emily Crow. Hello, Emily.
Hello, Emily. It is so great to see you, speak to you. Yes.
I think we're children of the 80s. So there's like 8 gabillion Emilys out there from a 5-year period when we were born.
I'm right on the cusp, 91, the most popular name for girls in 1991. So thanks,
really?
Mom.
Yes. Oh, so my mom, I was an 86 baby. So mom was like, no one was named Emily. I'm like, well, I am. And now everyone is.
Yep. That was always the fun game to play in elementary school and like in choir when you're like, okay, this is Emily C. This is Emily M. This is Emily J. Like everyone goes by their name and their last initial.
I have so many of us. Avas and Annas.
Yes.
Like talk about diction. Ava M and Ava N.
Oh, yes.
That's a thing. Yes. But that's how I became an Emmy. I think there were like 5 or 6 Emilys on my floor. And everyone just started calling me Emily. My husband calls me M.
Yeah. That's definitely a common go-to for sure. Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad that you're here. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you. Of course. My pleasure.
Will you tell the audience that you are a Midwestern born New York transplant, snowboarding currently in Charleston, and I can't wait to see you in a couple weeks.
But
will you tell the listeners, who are you? Who is Emily Crow?
Yes, well, I am Emily Crow. I am a Scorpio, a fierce Scorpio, as they like to call me. And I am a New York City-based music educator. I dabble in lots of different things. Choir is my first love, and it is just. And I do lots of different things. I teach, I sing, I coach, I serve kind of as an administrator. I do just lots of different things. But at the end of the day, I like to say that my job is a full-time advocate for music education in our schools, which is just the dream. So
how did you get into advocacy? Because when I met you because of Morgan.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. We met at a choir conference.
Yes, of course. met at a choir conference. And Morgan Ludig had told me about you, and you popped up and said hello. So friendly. And I was stoked that someone else was matching the energy level of first time meeting. And I was not scared. It was awesome.
Right. There are definitely so many different types of people that make these kind of first impressions. And I even though I feel like I carry myself with confidence. It's also, I get very nervous sometimes thinking about these intros that I make with people that I've seen. And I remember seeing you, and actually not meeting you, but seeing you at ACDA in Kansas City, leading a sing through. And I was like, wow, this girl is my spirit animal. She reminds me so much of who I want to be, and it's just awesome. That's so sweet. I'm very, very grateful that we are connected and have blossomed our own friendship. And it is just it's been a delight for us to connect from across the country.
I know.
We're close now, which is
great. I know. We are close for just a second, which is nice. Yes, you're a couple hours away. But when I met you, you were in a classroom, or you had tell us the story. How did it start? How's it going?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I've been in many different types of classrooms. Started off doing high school choir, drama, and guitar. And then I for a year. Then I made a transition to teaching middle school math and science. Another calling, wanted to try something a little different. And then at the end of those 2 years, loved it. Then I made my way down the age range again into an elementary classroom as a founding general music teacher, starting in a newer school, kindergarten through first grade only, with 90 little adorable children for each grade, and grew the program and grew the school too. So really kind of aged along with my kids and started doing more and more things to really make music part of our core identity at our school, and have now made that another transition out of the classroom, where I am trying to bring that similar like DNA and energy and chutzpah to our other programs in our affiliated schools. So it's definitely been interesting, but.
You're an admin. What's your title? What's your type of admin?
My official title is music programs manager. And I guess what that-
Sounds so fancy.
Fancy. I dabble in so many different things. It's school facing, student facing, leadership facing with principals the counter to principals, operations directors, and with superintendents and with parent councils and facilities managers and all these different things. So it's a combination of working with teachers through coaching and through feedback, working in curriculum development, and working with partners to continue to grow funding and putting our music programming on the map for our organization and for our communities as well.
So that's where the advocacy comes into play. So really, definitely, you're a coach, you're a trainer, you're a voice. And what is your product? Like, when you look at the end of the day, when you're whoever is watching what you do that you report to, what are they looking for? What are they measuring?
I think it starts first with children smiling and being happy, being themselves as authentic musicians, and then levels up to teachers feeling confident and proud of being able to instill that joy into their students through their hard work with what they're doing. And then leveling that up again to having that connected to families and to school leaders who can look at their children and look at their teachers and say, like, wow, they did that. And like, that is something to be incredibly proud of. And they did it all on their own usually. And, had a team of people behind them cheering them on. But at the end of the day, like, it is something that that they've put together, whether it be a lesson or a performance or an idea behind, remote learning and these different pivots that we've had to make as teachers as well. There are so many different ways in where this, like, this idea behind a product can, how it can kind of be broken down and perceived. But I think it really, really boils down to our students growing and developing their innate musical selves. And what does that look like? And how can we continue to, like, move the needle on that and push more growth into our programs so that we can have more joyful music making moments?
Oh, I love that. Do you miss the classroom? Tell us about this transition.
I miss it every day. I do. I miss it. It's I've always found myself drawn to working with students and working at various ages. And sometimes working with just adults can be a little intimidating and a little you know, it's a lot. But I think that when I feel overwhelmed or when I feel like, wow, I really miss the classroom, I really have to ground myself in thinking about how is the action that I'm taking on a day-to-day basis or week-to-week basis or longer than that, you know, month-to-month or a year-to-year, how am I making an impact on students that I may not even have met through the work that I'm doing and helping our teachers and programs continue to grow? And that that fulfills me in a way that I haven't always felt as a classroom teacher, because as a classroom teacher, I'm always able to see the joy and feel the joy in the moment. And sometimes I fall on the memory of that and looking back as a teacher. And now I'm kind of more forward thinking, I guess, and how that joy can be recreated, even if I'm not, even if I don't have a direct hand in it. But really trusting that the work that I'm doing, I am still making an impact, and that our kids are happy and musical at the end of the day.
What have you learned as you've transitioned? Because this is all such, mm-hmm. it's such a good reminder as we kick off the next year. I believe your episode's going to air right at the start of January. So I feel like it's perfect, because just thinking about why we do this and your why being the joy and the musical moments for the young people, no matter their age, and equipping the teachers. What have you learned transitioning from classroom to administration mm-hmm. that's both helped you be successful in the new role, but can also be flipped and sent back into the classroom?
This is a great question. I think that as a music teacher, I always was really focused on creating experiences for myself and for my students. What song are we rehearsing? What unit am I planning and putting together that I know will have these desired outcomes? And making this transition has been challenging in a way that it feels sometimes like the actual work can be less tangible and less, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, it doesn't just live on a score or in a lesson plan or in a unit plan. It really kind of lives in this, what kind of systems and communication am I building within an organization that will lead to more success for our schools and for our teachers? And that's tricky, because it doesn't always feel at the end of the day, I'm very much a taskless person, where I have, you know, these 7 to 10 tasks that I want to check off every day. And it's like, okay, I did that and I'm done. And there's been a lot of unlearning that I've had to do in kind of scoping out the work that I have. You know, I'm not in a performance cycle anymore, like I was as a teacher, you know, where your quarters and your the way that you kind of plan is really usually centered around performances. Okay, great, move on to the next. There's no more like final box for me to check. And so that's been a big transition. But I think I've been learning a lot about kind of reworking my skill set to have more of a nonprofit manager approach to the work that I'm doing. So it is music educator first, but bringing in these, you know, long-term strategic planning skill sets that I didn't learn how to do that in undergrad, and I haven't really had to dabble in my teaching career. And so how can I build and explore this new skill set for long-term planning that will be able to kind of like trickle down and have this sort of similar impact for our classrooms across our schools.
How are you learning all of this?
Trial and error. Trial and error, for
Isn't
sure.
Isn't that teaching? That's so teaching.
It really is. It really is. And it's interesting, because as a teacher, you know, if you're teaching the same, at my old school, we had 3 classes per grade. So, and I would see, you know, 1 class of kindergarten on Monday, the next class on Tuesday, and the next class on Wednesday. And by Wednesday, gosh darn it, that lesson was really good. You know, you just get better and better. And it's similar in this work. It just doesn't feel as like punchy or in the moment you're able to kind of respond to it right away. There's a lot more one of the brilliant, and I'm very, very grateful for this, because this is the first time that I've been in a role where I really am working with a lot of people outside of that. We all work in education, but it's outside of the teaching and instruction space. Mm-hmm. So I have a team of people that I get to, you know, pick their brains, that work in development and work in strategic planning and work in finance and facilities, mm-hmm. and you know, content development and all these different areas that are at the end of the day related to growing the classroom and to growing our schools. But also similar to me, it's hard to see sometimes how that is, how the work that you're doing today is impacting the classroom tomorrow, because it really can sometimes feel like it's something we're doing down the line, or, you know, right. that you'll actually feel the effect in a month or in 5 years. Like that is, mm-hmm. That's hard. That's been tricky. So I think I've learned a lot by asking multiple questions and just trying to seek as much clarity every single day in what I can do to better my own practices and to better the way that I'm thinking about, you know, the specific projects that I'm working on or the specific outcomes that I'm hoping to gain in my work. And it's hard. There are some days where I'm like, wow, I know what I did today, but I don't know what I did today. Right. And that is a very different feeling that I did not have as much when I was in the classroom, I would say.
I feel like there's some days in front of the college kids, especially when the lecture's over, they've given their feedback and you're back in there reading their responses or their discussion posts. And you're thinking, oh my gosh, it really did click, even though they gave zero acknowledgement that it clicked, but yes. You see that it clicked. What I really like, going back to what you said a moment ago, mm-hmm. you lean on the people you're surrounded with. You said something mm-hmm. about a finance person, a development person, a facilities person. Mm-hmm. Those are such great things as teachers in the classroom that you can be aware of. There's someone in your building that is in charge of the facilities. What a great mm-hmm. time to start to really invest in your relationship with them. There is Absolutely. Someone in your school district that does development. What a perfect time while we're kind of gearing back up into the semester, mm-hmm. into the who knows what's happening next. What are some things that you've learned from these different areas?
Yeah, well, I think also too that to your point before I move on onto this question, I think it's as a teacher, we're very, very, we know who to go to when it comes to teaching content, right? And like we've created a network of other teachers that we can lean into, whether it be your district or with your, you know, local ACDA chapter, you know, your people within your network. And those are, I still rely on those people every day. And my team of teachers are the first people I should have named. So apologies, my team of teachers, because they're the ones exactly like your college students. So it's like, okay, what am I seeing that clicks every day? But I think to your other point, there are so many people, whether you're working in a school or in a community organization, or there are so many different connections that to people that we can make that will have a hand at some point in your program or in your classroom or in your performance. And it sometimes isn't as apparent to reach out to those people and just to ask the question, whether it is, I mean, it's hard, I guess, to think this past year about like performance practice and prep, because a lot of performances looked very different this year. But mm-hmm. one great example is, you know, at our organization, we've done a ton of virtual performances, which have been great. Our teachers have just run up the mountain with a smile on their face and have just put together some incredible virtual content that we get to share with our community to show, look, music learning happened even in the era of COVID. Mm-hmm. And wow, our students learned quite a bit, which is awesome. And so now beyond that, there are so many other people that I want that content to reach, because I want to acknowledge, look, you finance team who helped me, you know, think about the messaging that I needed to communicate in this budget, you had a hand in making sure that music mattered for our organization and for our kids. Mm-hmm. And so it's not always like there's, I think it's a bookended effect where you ask the question and like, or you come with a problem. And even if that solution doesn't, or that, you know, the feedback that you get doesn't have a direct impact in that moment, later, when it comes back, like those people need to be acknowledged, because they were all working for, you know, the common good, whether it be, our students just growing as students or growing as musicians. And so that has been a really cool thing to see and to experience on sharing like the joy of our programs and our classrooms outside of just our immediate school community, being like families and teachers and really extending the work and extending the love, which has been wonderful. So
what a great way to see the shining light. And before all of this COVID stuff happened, you were designing a new curriculum that was part of your job description. Did you get that done? What does that look like? And what were some things you learned through the curriculum design process?
Curriculum design is, I think when I jumped into this project of this, of, you know, wanting to create a curriculum that can be applicable, you know, as a classroom teacher, every single classroom is going to look different. Mm-hmm. And curriculum, therefore, cannot be one size fits all. Mm-mm. And so it has been, the short answer, no, the curriculum's not done. But the curriculum will never be done, you know? And that has been a really incredible challenge of figuring out, okay, as someone who is writing and working through curriculum, how can I create a system of consistency that we can copy but modify year to year, but also can be applied to the different types of learning communities that we have at our schools in New York City? I mean, New York City is one of the most diverse places in the country and in the world. And so curriculum is not a one size fits all for our teachers. And so that has been interesting because that, you know, there are approaches, there are methods, there's repertoire that you can pull in and say, okay, we're doing this, but that does not necessarily always, that's not always the right answer for teachers and for kids. I think it's been interesting to kind of figure out where the curriculum structure can be developed in a way that is, can be shared with teachers and then have them feel more equipped. I think that's the way I'm starting to view it more, is like, okay, the goal here isn't to have a perfect lesson plan that I can give to you and then you take it and then you have a knockout lesson, because there's so much that goes into a lesson plan beyond just the actual document. You know, it's internalization. It is differentiating for your specific students that you have in your classroom, because I don't know, if I'm writing curriculum, I don't know your students, you know, I'd like to, but, so that's why I think it's really important to really think about, you know, if I'm sequencing a teaching framework that you can apply to these, you know, to your repertoire or to your outcomes that you want, and give you different suggestions on, hey, this is what I would do, or build it into the sequence of giving feedback when I'm observing or when I'm working with teachers, that I think is more powerful, and being able to have curricular tools that facilitate conversation and make teachers feel more excited about taking it and making it their own.
A sequential framework. It's not unlike, I've just, right before we had this call, I was finishing up some syllabi for the spring, and I redo it every year. Like, it's the same framework, but I redo it, just the inside inner workings, moving things around, because I know what students are signing up. Yeah. And I know what they're coming from. I've gone through and see, because I have upper level music ed folks.
Right.
And it's so interesting because I design all the classes. This is a really good idea from one of our fellow Music Ed Matters listeners, Dr. Erin Millard. But she organizes her elementary class like a lesson plan. The first thing you learn about is the very top. Who are you teaching? And then you learn about the standards and the objectives and then how you teach, and all of it fits. So by the time they actually start writing lesson plans, they know every single element backwards and forwards for their, how they approached it that way. So designing that same type of framework for a secondary class, I can't just replicate it verbatim, because you might have beginning voices, you might have adolescent voices, you might have high schoolers, you might have a super advanced group like Chris Munz's group. Like, you never know. designing it all, it's been so interesting to see that there's, I'm happy with the framework and I'm happy with the sequence of what's due when, but the actual stuff on the inside, that's what gets me excited, because it's unique every time.
Exactly. I think it's, I think about the way that all the ideas as a teacher that I've gotten and to use in my own classroom, I've gotten from other people, you know, like very, 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 there's a very limited amount of teaching that I've done that has been designed solely by me. You know, there's so much influence from other teachers that I've worked with, from PD that I've gone to, from my undergrad professors who, yes, you know, gave me just the fresh eye of, ooh, you're this great musician, and like, let's turn you into a great teacher. There's so much that it's been really important for me when I'm writing and when I'm working on curriculum development to think about, if I am the teacher that's receiving this, how am I going to internalize this, or what can I take away from it? Because I'm the kind of teacher who I'm like, oh, can you send me that? Oh, I liked that. Can you send me that? Like, I have so many resources that it almost almost feels like too much sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so it's been tricky for me, I think, to kind of flip that in a way that's like, how are we creating, you know, structure and focus when there's so much good stuff out there? And there's right. so much that we want, you know, so many ideas that we want to try this and try this and try this, but really like, okay, let's take a zoom out look and start somewhere and then build something like with, mm-hmm. it's like the snowball effect. Like, how can we like keep it going and keep it going so that it's not just, you know, the 20 inches of snow that got dumped on New York City last night. You know, I am the snowstorm normally. So now it's me trying to think about how can I create that momentum that mm-hmm. is equipping, empowering, personalized, and will lead to results that are driven by the teacher, not driven by me.
Right. And what I like that you just said a moment ago was that you stop and think, what is the teacher being handed this? The teachers mm-hmm. need to stop and think, what is the student in my classroom or the singer exactly. in my classroom? What are we doing for them? How is this helping them? And I think with the snowball idea, building that momentum to avoid the burnout. Because yeah. I think the burnout or getting stuck in a rut or whatever you want to call it is because you're not working in a framework or you don't feel like you can branch out of the frame. I mean, I always feel like I'm stuck in a box. So I love the idea that there's just some really good sequencing. And like you yeah. said, we borrow from everyone. I'm constantly like, I have things in my syllabi that just say Bowers something because it's something that I learned from Dr. Bowers. I can't mm-hmm. take credit for that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's it is. And one of the things that I've loved about working in my organization and even like being a former math teacher, right? Like, there are things that I've learned by observing English teachers and math mm-hmm. teachers and science teachers that I can pull and make, and I can figure out, okay, how can I tweak this and make it work so that it's still central to my school community, but personalized to mm-hmm. making music, which is also really fun. It's like a cool, you're given a bunch of different puzzle pieces or Legos. Legos are better because I love Legos. And you just get to make what you want with those Legos. Mm-hmm. It's an ongoing process, and I still don't feel like I totally haven't figured out, and that is A-okay.
That's okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What you just said with the going into the English classrooms and stuff, I'll have to find it and put it in the notes. But Bill Gates, I believe, did a TED Talk on uh-huh. why other countries have such fantastic education programs. And one of the elements was that part of teacher training, ongoing professional development, was being paired into cohorts where you mm-hmm. were constantly going and seeing each other teach, and you were constantly assessing each other's teaching and giving each other feedback like you're doing for your teachers,
right.
but mm-hmm. outside of your area, because there's so much you can learn from crossing over to different places.
Yeah, my first teaching job in New York City when I was teaching middle school math, I felt very overwhelmed being in like a brand, you know, a young teacher, brand new to this content, brand new to, you know, middle school, which is its own beast. And I felt a little scared. And so what did I do? I went during my preps and I plopped my butt into Mr. Hull's English class and I watched him teach English. And it was really, and ask questions. You know, I think that it's every teacher who's listens to this knows that it's, you know, you're really, you can get the best information from the people around you that you work with. And that extends, you know, for me beyond just teaching and getting to know my students. And now in this new work that I'm kind of doing, it's okay. I feel a little intimidated sometimes by this. So who are the people that I can go and observe this meeting or that I can go to ask these questions so that I feel at the end of that 20 minutes or that hour or that week, a little bit more empowered to, and a little bit more comfortable just trying something and seeing how it works for me.
But you're not stopping. And I think that's why this is just such the perfect episode to kick off 21. Because you can be scared and you cannot know the answers. And you might need the momentum of a snowball instead of a 20-inch snowstorm, which I just can't wrap my head around. But it's all that snow.
It happens.
I do think there's so much good stuff. Now, let's totally flip for a second. Because last time we talked, we were talking about non-music books that we were reading. Mm-hmm. What have you been reading? I'd love to hear about it.
I got my two, and since this is going to be on YouTube, I'll show you. One was a great recommendation from you, High Performance
Habits.
Is that
my favorite book? I love that book.
It is. I've never been like an. Do you have a better category than like self-help books?
I really hate that category because I'm not self-helping. I'm just improving because I want to be the better version of myself the next day. So
improvement
personal
books.
Development. Improvement books.
Exactly. It is, I love this because this first one, then I'll talk about the second one. This book has been really helpful. I haven't finished it, which is great because every single time I go through, I try to set a goal, like a couple pages a day or like, even just, okay, great. I have 10 minutes. I'm a very slow reader, super slow. Just knock out a couple pages. And every time I read, I want to know what is something that I can walk away with. Mm-hmm. And apply this right away. So yesterday I read this one part. I reread Seeking Clarity and it's been one of my favorite chapters. And there's something, an activity that I did that I think will be really, really helpful for this January episode and thinking about, my manager gave me a really great piece of advice. She's like, don't do New Year's resolutions because, you know, it is, you should try to be constantly setting resolutions all year round. And so
Seeking Clarity.
Exactly, Seeking Clarity. And so I wrote this down, so I'm going to read it. I think that would be great. So, and this comes directly from this book, High Performance Habits.
By Brandon Bouchard.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. He says, step one is describe how you perceived yourself in the following situations over the past several months, with your significant other, at work, with kids, or in team, or in social situations. So a couple adjectives that you can reflect on, right? This is the reflection stage. And then step two, now ask, is this who I really see myself being in the future? How would my future self look, feel, and behave differently in those situations? Mm-hmm. I love that because now I'm thinking about like, okay, I've reflected and now I'm like, all right, what do I want to keep and continue to build or how do I want to then like change in the next however that period of time is, a week, a month, 4 years. And then the last part would be if you could describe yourself in just three aspirational words, words that would sum up who you are at your best in the future, what would those words be? And why are those words meaningful to you? And I think we did this activity, similar activity during your PD week, which was super awesome. And I still have, where is it?
You still have your 5-word mantra? Because that's pretty awesome.
In my book, Getting Stuff Done, I have it right here.
Hold on. That's so cool.
I'll read it. Courageous, innovative, empowered, joyful, and bold.
Oh, yes. You are living those things.
I'm trying every day, every single day. And it's. I think that this past year has been, you know, it's hard to reflect on and feel like we've made that impact and that we've made those big steps. And there have been lots of highs and lows. But I think that, you know, since this has been 2020 was a very innovative and learned year for many, it's really important to think about what are the things that we can take away from that to drive us going forward, which has been just really powerful. And really, it helps me feel proud of the work that I've done, even if it hasn't felt as satisfying as it used to.
Right.
Which is really helpful.
But reflection helps so much. In that book, High Performance Habits, is actually part of my student teaching syllabus. Because
awesome.
I think as you're going into teaching, there is so much from that book that not just helps you personally improve. I love mm-hmm. that word, self-improvement. Yeah. But it also, those questions you just asked with clarity would be great end of class reflections for your singers. What did we Absolutely. Achieve today? What will your future choir self think of this? Mm-hmm. How could you have done this differently? Or what could we as a group have done differently? Like, there's so much in that book. I've read it 5 times.
I've been taking notes the whole time. I just have like little annotations here and there, which is great.
I'm attending like his New Year's Day. Like he has a class on New Year's Day. I'm so stinking excited. Yeah. It's like 2 hours of my New Year's Day. And we were like taking all the notes. I've seen him speak live in person twice.
Yeah.
Such Amazing. A good speaker.
Yeah. I'm really enjoying it. And I think that it's been really helpful to anchor myself in like, not just the work, like the physical work, and the emotional work that you're doing in your, you know, quote unquote job, but like the work that you're doing for yourself and to mm-hmm. serve yourself. I think that this has definitely been, you know, the last year we've had a huge shift of like, how are we focusing on taking care of ourselves? And this is, you know, something that's really commonly said in schools, like you can't show up for your kids if you're not showing up for yourself, mm-hmm. which is true. But like that goes beyond just doing a bath bomb and like moisturizing your skin every day. You know,
it does.
And I love a good skincare routine. That could be a whole other podcast.
Yeah, don't take away my face masks. I'm like a queen.
Yeah, exactly. But how are you like nourishing your heart and your soul mm-hmm. as well too, to grow for yourself and for your kids? Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
And it doesn't, I mean, you don't have to get behind the frou-frou books. Like you're going to find authors that you don't like, and you're going to find mm-hmm. ones that really resonate. Like Brendon Broussard really resonates mm-hmm. with my list making thought processes.
Yeah.
And just 10 minutes a day and you're improving and you have something to think about besides woe is me, the world is ending.
I also love, I read over the summer Untamed by Glennon Doyle. And, you know, it took me a little bit, but what I love about it, about that book, and what I tried to sell it to my mother. Hi, mom. Who's just a wonderful, just incredible woman. And after I read it, and I think the one thing I love about that book is that because each chapter is so short, there's something to take out of each chapter, but it's also like, now that I've read it, mm-hmm. I know that when I need to go like get some inspiration on like how to deal with, you know, a disgruntled adult, or how to deal with like when I'm feeling a little down on myself, mm-hmm. To go back in and reread just one chapter, and you'll feel, mm-hmm.
feel so much better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Definitely. What's the other book you had? I'm so other excited book to is, see.
So this is, I guess, kind of related to our earlier conversation, but it's called Managing to Change the World, a Nonprofit Manager's Guide to Getting Results.
I have that book on my shelf. I haven't read it yet. Is it good?
It is really good. And you know what I like about it? It's kind of designed like a workbook. Okay. And I love a good workbook. I think I said this earlier. I love templates. I love when I see you do something, I'm like, send me that because that's what I want. And this is chock full of just like resources on planning and it's broken down into 3 different parts, which is very simple: managing the work, managing the people, and then managing yourself. And having a balance between those 3 things will, you know, make you feel a little bit more comfortable. And I like this book because it's there's so much as a former, I'm still a teacher, even though I'm not in the classroom right now.
Yes, you are. You are always a teacher.
But as a former classroom teacher, there's so much that I feel like I can connect to the work that I've done in the classroom and how I can build myself in this new, very, very different role and build myself and build my skills that are connected to the work that I've done. You know, as someone who's planned many performances in her life, you know, the backwards planning aspect of getting performances mm-hmm. together, it's the same thing. It's just mm-hmm. the way that you kind of break down a like long-term project, or the way that you define your goals or objectives for that project, just sounds and looks a little differently than we'll have programs printed 48 hours before concert. Right.
But you know, have like that list somewhere. And that's exactly. so important. And this is just teaching mm-hmm. you how to apply it to a non. What exactly. a cool book. We'll make sure we link the books and the authors mm-hmm. in the program notes.
Absolutely. It's been really great to just a little bit every day. And especially in a time where I haven't had to wake up super, super early anymore. So now that I have a little bit more time gifted into my life, which I'm very grateful for, it has been really nice to use that time to reinvest in myself mm-hmm. more than I was ever able to before.
There was a blog post posted on one of the choir blogs that are out there these days. Someone actually sent it to me in a text message. I'll have to put it on here, but it's a list of all the non-choir related reads that apply to life in the classroom and life in music. Just like like that not-for-profit book. Yes, yeah. I can't wait. Now I'll actually take it off my shelf. My husband bought me a whole bunch of not-for-profit books so I can start a not-for-profit branch as part of my LLC. And I cracked one of them open. I need to really read it. But I get distracted. I want to go back and read Brendan's book like five more times.
I know, right? And you can just pick one. Which habit do you need a little bit more help with today?
Let me tell you.
Go back in and do that.
That's why, great. And it's such a great, if you're listening to this and you have student teachers or you have fourth or fifth year students in the college level, it's a great book. My college kids have absolutely gotten a ton out of it. And I think, I don't know, we'll see, but I think it helps them not burn out because when they start to feel burnout, they go back to the right habit.
Exactly. Yeah. I love the idea behind it where it's like even when you're feeling, like, let's say you're at the point in your, not career, but in your life where you're like, okay, I've got it. Right. But sometimes not having, like, just riding out that mentality for a really long time is actually a stronger facilitator to the burnout because you're not being, it's not that you're not being challenged, but you're not, it's sometimes hard to see where you're going next and what's next for me. Yeah. And it's, you know, I've dabbled in many different types of jobs. And so it is always, you know, everything always feels very new, but I can definitely see how someone who's, you know, maybe feeling a little stagnant or maybe feeling a little like, how can I kind of redefine a goal or a venture for myself that will ultimately serve music and serve my students? How can I just reimagine what my future looks like other than like, I'm going to have this job one day. It's really not about that, which I like a lot.
Yeah, it's about being the best version every day. Exactly. Hey, this has been so fun. We've talked about everything, admin, curriculum building, looking at different perspectives, the best books to read.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the one thing you really want the listeners to walk away with?
Trust in yourself, trust in your kids, and always seek clarity to further yourself.
Yes. This is fun. We're going to have to do this again. We should do the Emily and Emily book review like in a few months after we've read a few more books.
We can. And we can, you know, we'll when COVID is over, we can do a podcast tour and you can come up to New York City and I'll come down to Savannah and we'll just, it'll be great. It'll be great. Live podcasting.
You just wait. If there is eventually a time we can all be together, PD week is happening in Savannah. Like we are going to own it in Savannah.
I cannot wait. Yes,
but I want to come to New York anyway.
Yes, you will. But I, you know, one of the best things about wintering down here in Charleston at the moment is the Southern food. I just love it. I love
it.
And I need all of the recommendations. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm thrilled that you are down in this neck of the woods. And I'm even more thrilled that we are friends and that you have shared so many great pieces of advice and ideas as we dive into, may I say it, 2021.
We did it. Woo!
Okay, thanks.
Thank you so much.
What a perfect way to start 2021. Books that you can read to help improve yourself or just find new ways and new things to think about. Ideas for how to reverse and look at your students or your community and how you can best serve. And just a fun conversation about how we can do hard things. How we don't have to know the answers. You don't have to know what 2021 is going to hold. You just have to keep showing up. I'm so glad that you listened today. Please know, whatever you're doing, it matters. We know that music matters, and I'll see you next time on the Music Matters podcast.